Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
Outstanding. Well, today we're really excited. We're going to bring in a guest that we're really excited to talk about. It's probably the most essential ingredient in the Mexican diaspora. We're talking today, of course. The topic is, can heirloom corn be saved? And it's a huge, huge question that needs to be asked. And to help answer those questions, we are very, very honored and super excited to introduce and present Rafael Mier. He's an entrepreneur, a conservationism. He's the owner of Tortilla de Maíz. Rafael is the founder and director of Fundación Tortilla, a nonprofit initiative that promotes corn and tortilla culture in Mexico. During the last 6 years, he's been working in lobbying to recover a good quality of tortilla for the Mexican people and promoting a program to preserve Mexican ancient popcorn. You can imagine that, what a great undertaking that is. And to promote corn and tortilla knowledge, he has started a communication strategy based on social media, which now accounts for more than 450,000 followers. So you can imagine he's well on his way and already accomplished so much as far as spreading the gospel about beautiful heirloom maíz and corn. And he's also participating in over 200 events in different agricultural and culinary schools. So you can imagine this gentleman right here is bringing the goods. He's going to enlighten us. And I love this. This is Rafael's motto. He goes, sin maíz, no hay país. Without corn, there is no country. The Aztecs were fondly referred to as the people of corn. They kind of lived their life through the harvesting of corn. It was somewhat of a calendar. So we're really excited. Everyone, please welcome Rafael Mier. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Aaron and Sarel. I am very happy to be here today with you.
So talk to us a little bit, just so we can start and have a little bit of a foundation about your love affair with corn. What was your mission in the beginning to really promote the awareness and all the beautiful things that corn has to bring, especially for the heirloom varietals from Mexico?
Well, as you, I'm sure you know, Mexico is the center of origin of corn, and corn is the most important and sacred food for the Mexican people. But the problem is that even though corn is so important, nowadays people are dropping their consumption. The consumption is in decline. People are eating less and less tortillas, tamales, atoles. And we are worried about that, especially because many people in the big cities are not eating any more corn. And that's something important. Also, we are worried because of people not knowing how to make a tortilla. Many Mexicans nowadays doesn't know how to prepare a tamale or an atole. And we believe that this is connection with the main source of the food is a threat. It's something that we need to change. And that's why I started this foundation. One day I was eating with my family, with my nephews, nieces, brothers, sisters. And then I realized that many of my family and friends, they don't know how to make a tortilla. And I realized that this is a big issue. People in Mexico should need to know about tortilla. They need to know about corn. They need to know about how important it is for our culture, for our daily diet, no? And that's how I decided to start a Facebook page. That's how we started. Since I realized that people need some information, I thought, well, nowadays many people are in the social media. I should start a Facebook fan page. And that's how I started. At the very beginning, there were just a couple of friends and family. And nowadays, we have a lot of people joining and following us, our work. Since that day, we have been posting daily information regarding corn, tortilla, tamales, and all these different foods that could be made with corn, and trying to make a change and trying to make people aware about the importance of corn. And we can talk a lot about all this, no?
So, Rafael, you know, we're talking about the tortilla consumption in Mexico has fallen 40% in the last 30 years. Now, the question that we have for you, amongst many more, but knowing that there's a possibility of 59 different varieties of heirloom corn varieties native to Mexico that are on the verge of being extinct or not being available, are you having a direct dialogue with government and the local farmers to create awareness about this?
Yeah, well, there it's important to mention that not all of the 59 land races of corn in Mexico are endangered. Some of them they are, because some of them they are produced just by a few farmers. Like, for example, the palomero, all these popcorn. There we have in Mexico many different land races of heirloom popcorn that now they are not being produced as much as we want. But there are other land races that they are produced in big quantities, no? Like, for example, Tuxpeño corn is one of the corn that is most widely produced in Mexico. And many people still eat them, no? But as you were mentioning, there's a risk of losing some of these varieties. It's important to notice that most of these land races were developed by farmers through the history by selecting and choosing their best seeds in order to improve and enhance their production abilities, their cooking features, no? And most of the corns are related to a geographic region in Mexico, to a different indigenous people, no, to families, to traditions, to special dishes. For example, in Mexico we have land races that are specially used for some particular dish. For example, for the tlayudas, we use the bolita corn. For the pozoles, we use cacahuacintle, maíz ancho, maíz jala. So we have different land races for every particular dish, no? So what's the problem now is that we are switching to other kinds of modern corn. We are switching to hybrid corns. And we are also receiving a lot of GMO corn from the U.S. and from other countries, but especially from the U.S. And this corn is taking the place of the land races' native ancestral corns. And that this is a topic that we want to change. So what are we doing? First of all, we are trying to make people know that Mexico is so rich in diversity of corn. We have so many different varieties, these 64 different land races from which we have thousands of varieties, no? And they are the base, they are the basement of our traditional cuisine, no? If we want to preserve our Mexican food, we need to preserve our traditional corns, no? So what we're doing in the Fundación Tortilla is trying to make people know about this diversity. We want people to know that we have different corns, that each region, each state of Mexico, each indigenous people have different corns, and these different corns are the basement of the traditional food. We are also trying to work with the government in order to make them know that it is important to to take care of these heirloom varieties, we are trying to work also with the chefs, with the people in the traditional cooks, because nowadays corn is like generalized. We are not paying attention to what kind of corn are we cooking in our restaurants. No, probably you have seen there are thousands of cookbooks in Mexico from Mexican cuisine, and you will never find which kind of corn is the one that is used for any particular dishes, no? So if you read the mole section or you read a mole recipe, you will find that you need the guajillo pepper or the...
Yeah, but why is that not happening with the corn? Yeah.
And this is not happening with the corn, yeah, no? Yeah. So it has been generalized. It has not been we haven't paid the attention it should have, no?
Yeah.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Rafael. So basically, your mission has been to create awareness about the consumption of tortillas and all the different heirloom varietals of corn that are not just consumed in Mexico, but also permeating all over Latin America, America, etc. We know that it's important to try to make sure that there's a discussion with government and the producers to make sure that to create an avenue for people to actually seek out this information and be smarter about their choices when it comes to tortillas. You eloquently mentioned that if you look at a cookbook that has moles, for instance, there's a distinct classification of the chiles, for example, but there's not necessarily that for corn. If a recipe calls for masa or tortillas, there's not necessarily that kind of understanding of how to seek out that particular information. And so that's really where we're at right now, as far as making sure that we're creating that understanding, getting the message out there to the masses. Mm-hmm. And Mom, you had a question for him, right? For Rafael.
Yeah. So how does that apply to the home cook?
Well, to the home cook, Nazarela, it's important to mention that most of the people nowadays, they don't cook corn. They used to buy the masa, they used to buy the tortillas. So one of the important things is to make and bring back people to cook corn in their houses. That's one of the missions that we really want to do. And also, if they are not going or willing to cook their own corn in-house, they should try to find good places in order to source a better corn, a better tortilla, so they could have a better quality food.
How much of your corn heirloom corn goes into liquor? Because I understand that a lot of the native corn from Mexico goes to produce liquor.
Well, now there are many people doing whiskeys and beers and some mm-hmm. stuff, but they are just starting. It's important to mention that we have a big production of corn in Mexico. We produce more than 27 million tons of corn. Half of it is heirloom corn, and the other half of it is hybrid corn. So if you go to the rural places in Mexico, we still are eating a lot of heirloom corn. All these new enterprises, Arela, they are still small. probably in the future they will be heavy consumers of corn, heirloom corn, and that's something that we are willing to happen. No, we want people to use native corn, to pay a fair price for them, and to use them in many different uses. No,
is there currently a domination of origin in Mexico to actually recognize particular regions that produce corn like you would do with wine or tequila, or no?
Not yet, Aaron, not yet. That's something that Mexico needs to work on. The denominations of origins, they are a little bit complicated because they need a federal norm, like an act, in order to be completed. And the problem in Mexico is that we have so many different varieties of corn that we will need to work with hundreds of denominaciones of origin. What it has been made, like the past year, two senators proposed a new law. Now Mexico has a new law of which protects the heirloom corn varieties in Mexico. It has been voted and it has been approved in the senator chamber and in the diputados, Cámara de Diputados and Senadores. It has been approved. And now it's time to do all the reglamentos, all the regulations that comes and derived from this act. This is a very important thing. We also have in the policy side, we also had a presidential decree passed this year in which they stated that we shouldn't eat more GMO corn. There's a goal to switch all this corn consumption from the GMO corn. We will drop all this consumption and try to eat the Mexican corn, no? And it's also, they are banning the use of glyphosate, that you might probably know that it's a herbicide that is heavily used all around the world to produce corn and wheat and many other products, that it has been proved to be a cancer, no? It produces cancer,
no? Wow.
I think the herbicide is also related to Parkinson's. They're doing a whole bunch of studies, you know, with this herbicide being related to Parkinson's.
Yeah, that's true, no?
Yeah.
They have been finding many different health risks and
associated with it. Now, let's talk a little bit about palomitas, no? About the popcorn. So, yeah, I know that this is a really passionate project for you, Rafael, which is a derivative, obviously, of the maize and the corn. Talk to us a little bit about the popcorn and how it's sort of puffed up and how it's become something that is so special. Because I know that you work with maize from Toluca, no? Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. First of all, I think it's important to know that popcorn is probably one of the eldest ways in which Mexican people and the world has been eating corn. Mm-hmm. All the old varieties of corn were popcorn.
Yeah,
and this ability to pop is a feature that they inherited from the teosintle. Mm. The teosintle is this wild grass from which all corns come from. And if you can imagine in the history, people were using corn. They were placing fires and lighting fires, and when they put these ears of corn close to the fire, they pop. And that's probably one of the earliest ways of eating, you know? And that's why we have been so interested in corn. Mexico has many different heirloom varieties of popcorn. And nowadays, even though Mexico has this diversity, Mexico is buying the whole production, the whole consumption of their popcorn is coming from the U.S. More than 99% of the popcorn production and consumption in Mexico is coming from the U.S.
Wow.
Even though we are the center of origin of popcorn. Popcorn started here in Mexico And they travel down to South America, north to the North America and the U.S., but Mexico dropped their production of popcorn, no?
And do you need a separate variety of corn to make popcorn, or is it can be used with the same stuff that you would make tortillas with?
Yeah. Well, this is important. Like, not all the corns are able to produce popcorns, no? Mm-hmm. We need to use flint corn, which is like a very hard endosperm. We need the starches to be very tightly packed in order to make this pressure, to hold the pressure of the steam. When you heat, you know, when you place a kernel of popcorn in the pan or in a microwave, this kernel has a little proportion of humidity inside. And when you are heating these kernels, this moisture evaporates and builds pressure.
Ah.
And that's why it pops, and it then all these starches gelatinize and produce the popcorn.
No, and Rafael, I think it's safe to say, you know, you said it's permeated all these different cultures. It's definitely become part of pop culture.
That's good. That's
okay,
very
Mom.
Cute.
Honey. Sorry, anyway.
Anyway, and I'm going to bring up another subject. You know, Mexicans used to have beautiful teeth because they ate a lot of nixtamalized corn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because it has all this calcium. So I wonder what is happening now with Mexican teeth now that they're eating other things.
Well, the problem with Mexican teeth nowadays is the consumption of sugar. You know that we are one of the most important consumers of soft drinks and all these sweets, no? But coming back to the nixtamalization is one of the most important techniques in Mexico for producing and transforming corn. As you mentioned, it brings a lot of calcium to the diet, but it also brings the possibility to assimilate better the nutritional components of corn. Vitamins and minerals and all these fiber, they are better digested because of cooking the corn with calcium hydroxide or cal, no?
Yeah,
how
cal.
We call it, no? Or culinary lime, no? As you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And when combined with beans, it becomes a perfect protein.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know that we consume a lot of corn together with beans or with other legumes like fava beans or this.
Now, Rafael, so when you open an ear of beautiful corn and you see all those little silky strands, right?
Yeah.
Is it true that each one of those strands represent one individual kernel of corn?
Yeah, that's true, Aaron.
It is, right? Okay,
it
cool.
It is, it is.
You know, so I heard that and I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. And that's interesting because that's the way corn pollinates. Unlike other plants in the botanic, no? Corn pollinates through wind, especially, no? So we have these flowers, the corn starts flowering, and all this pollen goes down, no? Each of these silks or strands, they need to collect one grain of pollen in order to pollinate and fecundate the grain.
Wow.
So each particular grain of an ear of corn is a known individual.
Wow.
So the genetics of one kernel is different from the genetics of his brother or sister kernel, no?
I love that.
So, yeah, we have thousands, no?
So what effects are all the seed banks that the farmers are setting up in all the little, in the comunidades? You know, our friend Gira Vallejo and Jonathan Barbieri are working with a lot of the comunidades, and they have all set up their seed banks.
Yeah, that's true.
So how is that affecting the population, you know, the use?
Yeah, probably this is something interesting to mention a little bit earlier. is to know that the Mexican corn we produce, these heirloom varieties, are open pollinated. So all these varieties of ancient corn that we are growing here is seed that is produced, selected, and saved each particular generation from years to years. No, and this has been done for 9,000 years. The difference with the corn that the big farmers, both in Mexico or in the U.S., this hybrid and GMO corn, is that that kind of corn is selected and their genetic pool is reduced so much that we are just having just a few lines of corn, just a few blots of corn. But what we have in Mexico is a huge diversity. Every year, millions of plants, different individual plants with genetic information, are being produced in Mexico. And those are the ones that are keeping and saving our heirloom corn varieties, both in Mexico and in other countries of Latin America. These seed banks which Sarela is talking about, these seed banks are built and are promoted nowadays in order to keep and save these seeds. This kind of special seed has been saved and stored for millions of thousands of years, and we don't want them to lose. If one particular farmer has a bad year, or they cannot, if they faced a drought or a hurricane or whatever problem they could face in their production, they could lose their varieties and they could lose the seeds of these long time adapted and treasured seeds, no? And that's why it's important to make safety places in order to keep seeds just in case there's a problem or
Yeah.
Let me ask you one thing. You mentioned that popcorn is flint corn.
Yeah.
Well, most aren't. That's a hard starch.
Yeah.
So what aren't most Mexican varieties soft starch?
Well, we have both. We have hard endosperm that are these flint corn. Then we have dented corn that is in the middle, is in the intermediate of hardness. And then we have flower corns or starchy corns, no? That are like cacahuacintle corn is a good example of a starchy corn or flower corn. But we have a whole range of diversity. For example, and not always all the flint corns are used for popcorn. For example, the corn bolita, that is a very famous corn from the central valleys of Oaxaca, and is the one that is used to make tlayuda, is a very hard endosperm corn.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can you get Mexican popcorn in the U.S., Rafael? Are we starting to export to the U.S.?
Well, one of the main problems with popcorn now in Mexico is that producers didn't pay attention to their ability to pop. Most of the consumption in Mexico goes to tortilla. No, the like 80% of the corn that is produced in Mexico heads to the production of tortilla. So what happened to our ancient popcorns? That people start looking at these little ears and they start thinking that these ears weren't so valuable, and they start dropping them. So nowadays, the situation is that most of the people that are still producing this popcorn, they now lost the knowledge of popping them. They don't know that they have the capacity of popping. They are mixed with other tortilla corns or pozole corns, elote corns, and now they drop their ability to pop.
Wow. And it's sad that they weren't listening to those little ears.
Yeah, that's true.
You're getting better, honey. Yeah. Getting better.
Now, Rafael, as far as people engaging with you, being able to ask more questions about how they can help, how can they spread the word, what would be your suggestions for people to get behind this movement?
Well, first of all, they need to meet all these corns, no? Mm-hmm. And one of the best ways to meet these corns is to come to Mexico, travel around Mexico, meet their amazing cooking cooks, no? All these dishes that made with corn. Corn is such a versatile ingredient. You can use it and cook it in so many different ways, no? So the first thing is to taste and know and meet all this experience, no? Mm-hmm. In the other side, it's important to promote the consumption of a good corn. If you live in the U.S., there are many different entrepreneurs and many different tortillerias, taquerias that are trying to make a better tortilla, better mm-hmm. tacos, better tamales all around the U.S., no? Many of them, they are bringing corn from the EU, from Mexico. There are some companies now in Mexico that are exporting heirloom corn to the U.S. So nowadays, many people in the U.S. are able to eat Mexican corn in many different restaurants.
Can you mention a couple of those sources?
Well, yeah, we have Tamoa.
Okay.
Tamoa is a company that is exporting corn. We have Macienda, Agropa, Idbi Maíces. There are many different companies that are also shipping Mexican corn to the U.S., no?
I think it's important to add some links as well. We'll get all your information, Rafael. My mom will put some stuff up as well. So,
what is the best corn for sacahuil?
Explain what sacahuil is, Mom, please.
Sacahuil is a gigantic tamal, but I'm going to go to Oaxaca next week and I'm going to do a party, and I don't dare do Oaxacan cooking. So I'm going to make Veracruz cooking, and I want to make a sacahuil de olla. It's a gigantic tamal, but you can also do it in a pot that you crack the tamal into smaller pieces, like the size of rice. You cook it in a lot of lard and in a lot of stock, and it is fantastic. So that's one of the things I'm going to make for them.
That sacahuil is amazing. Sacahuil, Sarela, as you know, is coming from this Huasteca region. And this region has a big diversity of corn. One of the most important corns of this region is the Tuxpeño or Tampiqueño corn. And this is a tropical corn that is grown all around the coasts in Mexico, and also up to the mountains a little bit. So Tuxpeño could be a good corn for your sacahuil.
That's good.
And it's a big ear. And this Tuxpeño corn is also good for tamale leaves.
Yes.
This is one of the biggest corns we have in Mexico. This Tuxpeño, together with the Jala corn. And they are perfect for extracting their leaves for tamales, no?
Yeah. And a lot of regions in Oaxaca, they actually use the leaves of the actual corn plant, not the husks. And that
exactly.
Like the tamales de mole amarillo would be a great, example of that, where you actually use the leaves, not the corn husks. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's true. We use different parts of and different leaves to wrap our tamales. Sarela knows a lot about this. We have so many different tamales all around Mexico that we have so many different species of plants which we use to cover our tamales, no?
Of course.
Ricardo Muñoz Zurita is going to be on a podcast that he's going to talk about all the kinds of leaves that we use to wrap tamales.
Great, that's great.
Yes. Rafael, please let our listeners on Heritage Radio Network, how they can engage with you, how they can continue the conversation, your website, anything that you'd be comfortable giving.
Well, they can follow us in fundaciontortilla.org. That's our website. Or they can follow us in Facebook, Tortilla de Maíz Mexicana, or in Instagram, Fundación Tortilla, no?
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Rafael. You were a true tesoro de México. Estamos super orgullosos de todo tu trabajo. We're very grateful to have you here.
Yeah, well, of course. We were dying to have you here, and I'm happy that you're giving us a whole other, I thought that we knew about corn, but you gave us a whole other world to explore. Exactly.
Now. Yeah, there are so many things that we can talk. It's important to mention that we are changing now the Tortilla Act, and that's something that we weren't able to talk, but it's important to know that Mexicans will be able to differentiate better tortillas now that we are working in order to change and differentiate tortillas properly. So tortilla consumers could have better choices in Mexico. That's important.
Wonderful.
You know, I forgot to mention something. Rafael has this wonderful online courses on corn. You can enroll on his website, and the courses are really brilliantly done. And I'll just tell you a little fun anecdote. You know, somebody was making a tortilla, and Jesus Christ supposedly appeared in this tortilla, and it was put up in a church, and people came from miles around to worship the holy tortilla, as it should be worshipped.
Exactly.
Anyway. So thank you so much.
Gracias,
thank
compadre.
You so much.
Abrazos.
Thank you very much, Arel, Aaron. It has been a pleasure, and thanks for the invitation.
Yes, and again, just so everyone knows, we've been talking about, can the tortilla be saved? Can heirloom corn in Mexico be saved? And I can tell you very confidently, it is, thanks to the valuable work and commitment that Rafael Mier is doing with Fundación Tortilla and all the different things that he's involved. So we're eternally grateful. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Aaron Sanchez.
And I'm Sarela Martinez.
Hasta luego.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.